Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is the National Council of Young Israel. We're honored to have everyone here with us today, and especially Rebbe, for conference call number 133. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Let's begin. Question one. Discuss retirement packages and what seems to be the standard of Chodesh Hashanah. What is the source of this formula? Is it a halacha, midas chassidus, or an accepted minhag? Would it apply only to anyone working in the Moser, including Rebbeim and female Limudei Kodesh teachers? Is there an argument that shul use directly than weekly chazanim are entitled? Let's start from the beginning. We just read this past Shabbos, Hanek Tanek Lo, mitzvah Hanukkah for an Eved. Sefer HaChinuch, mitzvah Tov Pei Beis, says it's not limited to an Eved. Strictly speaking, of course it is, but in the spirit of the halacha, would apply to a worker as well. This is the source for what we'll call retirement packages. The Tzitz Eliezer in Chelek Zayin, Simen Mem Ches, talks about this. He says, you know, there's no real source for any Chodesh Hashanah. It doesn't say anywhere. It started as a minig in Eretz Yisrael. It did not start from Beis Din. My understanding is it started from the Histadrut, the very powerful labor union in Eretz Yisrael, which was extraordinarily powerful in the beginning years of the state. And once it was established as a minhag, so it applies, as is in general, HaKol Fi Minhag HaMedina, says in the Rishalmi in Bava Metzia, in this context, minhag ochir halacha. So if it's an accepted minhag, it becomes a halacha, you have to do it. In this country, in America, I don't think it ever caught on to the same extent. It's true that Torah Mesorah put out a pamphlet which recommends Chodesh Hashanah. It is not clear in all cases. For example, if there's a pension, it's not clear whether it applies, because one of the reasons for it is the person shouldn't be destitute if they have the pension that the yeshiva contributed to. So then that's instead of Chodesh Hashanah. Many schools have not accepted this Torah Mesorah garden, especially the called the more modern yeshivas. They say, we never did it. The proof is we retired many, many teachers over many decades. We never gave them Chodesh Hashanah. So it's impossible to say that they accepted it and that it's mandatory. So therefore, it all depends on this particular situation. I've never said that Chodesh Hashanah is an absolute. If it is the minhag in that place, then it becomes halacha, in effect, minhag oker halacha. But it's not always clear that that is, in fact, the minhag. So the Eliezer said, if you're not sure, so then hamotzi mechavel avaraya, you can't expect the school to give you the money if they claim it's not the minhag over here. If it is, they have to. Didn't Torah if necessary. And therefore, question B and C was Rebbeim, females, teachers, all these things is not relevant because it all depends upon what the minhag is. If the minhag applies to female teachers, yes. Youth directors, yes. Chazanim, yes. English teachers, yes. It all depends on what the minhag is. Adkan, question two. Is one allowed to use nasal spray for allergies on Yom Kippur? It's a very good question. Some nasal sprays, because of the way the body is constructed, will actually go down one's throat, and there'll be some kind of a taste to it. It's sort of swallowed a little bit. Then it's a problem. I believe that if a person's a chola she'en bo sakana, might still be mutter, because it's a very small amount, and it's pogum, and there's room to be lenient with that combination. If there is no blia, nothing is swallowed, then, again, the chol ha-shein bo sakana is permissible. How do you define that? Someone who cannot function normally. Do a matter for a fua, even what's called soch anointing, which is, has chatot and berosho, if he has a problem with the scalp, need medical attention, and then says in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Chosim Kippur, that it's okay. So therefore, that would apply as well. Certainly, if there's no swallowing, even if there is swallowing, according to some authorities, it might be okay. Three, if a shul is having a hard time finding a baal tekeh, their option is someone who already is belonging to another shul. What should this new shul do for their scheduling? Should they have all 100 kolos at the end of the davening? It's a very bad, very, very bad option. We know from the Mishnayos and the Gemaras that the tekiyos should be done what's called our Seder HaBrachos in conjunction with Shmoneh Esrei. And the Gemara implies that, the way we understand it, Token Shen Yoshu, Token Shen Omdin, that means the first they should have the 30 kolos, which we all have, and then have the tekiyos in Shmoneh Esrei. So to change that, not at all simple. What I would recommend in this difficult case is, you know, just waiting around, and I don't know how they want to handle it. Maybe you want to make some Kriya Shema, so you daven Shachris and Kriya Satorah. And if you know that the Baal Tekeh is not coming for another 2 hours, so you have a problem on your hands. You have to stall one way or the other. Either you serve a Kiddush, some yeshivas have that anyway, not to eat too much, but Rav Henkin was against Kiddush before the Tekeh, but in many places they do it anyway, yeshivas, shtiblach, so b'shas atzach, that could possibly be done. And if that's not enough time, have a shir, learn Torah, do something, give a speech, whatever it may be, and then you wait till the fellow shows up, and then you start the 30 kolos, and then you go to Shmoneh Esrei. It's very difficult to go against that, what is found in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, even though it may take a long time, they may finish the davening later. I don't see much of an alternative. Question four. You have a stellar Baal Tekeh for many years, whose hearing has gotten worse in recent years. What are the parameters to allow or not allow him to blow shofar Rosh Hashanah? As long as he hears, even if he hears only very faintly, it's certainly okay. Let him keep blowing. If he hears absolutely nothing, that's already not so simple. Not so simple. According to some authorities, if he hears nothing, so he can't be OT, he can't be OT to anybody else. So that's a serious problem. I would not allow him to blow such a case. Five, a balabas is losing his hearing and needs to get hearing aids. He was told that there are two options. The first is his batteries will last for about 5 days of regular usage, with 2 to 3 days if left in. The second is rechargeable, usually able to keep its charge for 24 hours, but usually is replaced and recharged on its base nightly. Is there a preference to buy the battery type to avoid Shabbos and Yom Tov issues? Absolutely yes. Try to avoid these issues. If someone bought the rechargeable type, what should he do for a 2-day Yom Tov? May he put it on the charger with a shinui? I think the answer is again the same answer as before. If he's a chola shein bo sakana, which I think he is, he can't function normally because he can't hear, then it's permissible to do something which is the rabbonon b'shinui. Some say even the rice is b'shinui. That's what should be done in this case. Other issues, hearing aids. Well, the whole discussion, can you be yotze? For example, Tekiya Shofar, said it before. If he's able to hear anything without his hearing aid, he should take out the hearing aid and go stand next to the bima. It's a serious question. You could be yotze now. If you don't hear it naturally, because you're hearing only through some kind of a hearing aid, or Shlomo Zalman, it's like hearing through a microphone, which may not be good. There are many other issues. The post can discuss, can I talk to an individual who has a hearing aid on Shabbos? Yes or no? So Moshe was asked that question. Came with a microphone. How can I talk to someone who has a hearing aid? So he gives distinctions. Some will in fact say no. You may not talk directly to someone with a hearing aid, although you may lane or down for the yomid in the shul, where there happens to be an individual with a hearing aid, not talking to him, but talking to the rest of the community. So there are many other issues about hearing aids, but we are unable to go through it at the present time. Just one moment. And I'm doing a conference call now for Young Israel. Can I call you back? I'm back. Question number 6. Razochet have a Sephardi Sefer Torah on loan. It's now our second Sefer Torah. The first Sefer Torah has an Ashkenazi Sefer Torah, also on loan, but is not very good shape with a couple of places that are confirmed kosher b'dieved and other places that have smudges. Ashkenazi Sefer Torah is still kosher to our understanding, but seems that the Sephardi Sefer Torah is more mehudar. For Ashkenazi Young Israel minyan, is it better to use the lower quality Ashkenazi Sefer Torah or the higher quality Sephardi Sefer Torah? As an addendum, another challenge now exists in that the owner of the Sephardic Torah says a condition of its being lent to us is that it should be used weekly. If we don't, we could risk having to return the Torah. The question now is, it better to use the Sephardic Torah in the Ashkenazi shul in order to, so that we would be able to have two separate Torah? Or is it better to use the one Ashkenazi Torah with the likelihood that the Sephardic owner will take the Torah back? A very good question. My view, they should use the Sephardic Sefer Torah. We assume that although the Ksav is somewhat different, there are different ways that it's done, we view it as being kosher. It's very difficult to say that a Sefer Torah, which is written in a different way, is not kosher. This comes up in so many different contexts. Those who say, Shav Ksav Ari, it's also not kosher. It's relevant for Tefillin, relevant for Sefer Torah, relevant for Mezuzahs. Ksav Ari has the Sadi going backwards. The right Yud is facing back, not forward, as the Beis Yosef has it. Again, it's difficult to say that all the mezuzahs are puzzled, all the tefillin is puzzled, it's puzzled. It's hard to say that. We'd rather say that there are different customs, but they're not marked by the Yevon. If I'm right, I hope I'm right, then I believe it would apply to the Sephardic Sefer Torah as well, even though the difference may be somewhat more dramatic than just to be a tzaddi with the yud on the right in one or the other direction. Nonetheless, the principle is the same. 7. Must a divorced woman cover her hair if it causes her a lot of discomfort and distress? Now, according to Shulchan Aruch, black letter law, a woman who is divorced is required to cover her hair. Rav Moshe has two exceptions. In Truvin Evan Ezra, he discusses the following case. There's a woman who, in the olden days when the shaitels were obvious, would lose her job if she wore a shaitel. She'd lose her job. She can only have parnasa if she does not cover her hair. I think it was an almana who needed the parnasa badly. So Rav Moshe, it depends what's the reason that a woman is required to cover her hair. Is it a mitzvah to cover her hair? Or is it a prohibition to not cover her hair? If it's a mitzvah, Rav Moshe writes, only required to give up 1/5 of your money, she should lose the whole parnasa. She need not cover her hair. If it's an iser, a prohibition, then there's no alternative. You have to cover the hair, no matter what. Says Rav Moshe, if she's married, the shaila d'oraisa, speka d'oraisa l'chumra. If she's widowed or divorced, it's the rabbanon. We can be maker. That's Rav Moshe's first tshuva. In the later tshuva, talks about a woman who is trying to find the shidduch, and she's afraid that if she covers her hair, it won't be as attractive to the boyfriend, and she may not be able to find a shidduch. There too, Rav Moshe says if it's necessary for a date to uncover her hair to be more attractive to the potential marriage partner, it may be done as well. In our case, we're discussing discomfort and distress. It all depends how the level of discomfiture, level of distress. If it's just a matter of slight discomfort, I would say no. However, if the discomfort rises to a situation of distress, it could be difficult for the person to function normally, that level of stress, nervousness, which could, it's the equivalent of a Moshe's tshuva, where it has negative impact on either parnasa or shidduchim, there is room to be lenient. I always tell people with this question that whether it is room or not to be lenient is an important consideration, which is what type of shidduch is this woman who's divorced looking for? she's looking for a shidduch in a more charedi sector, it's likely if she doesn't cover her hair, even if she has a heter, she'll say Rav Moshe said it's mutter, it's not going to work with the shidduch. If she's in a more modern sector, the person can be said Rav Moshe is matirit, it might improve the shidduch chances. So it all depends on the circumstances in terms of what is the wise thing to do. The halacha proper, as you said before, depends on the extent of the discomfort and distress. Question number 8. I daven much slower than the tzibur. That's good. What should I do about A, long tachnun on Monday and Thursday? Usually I'm just about up to the last paragraph when they are saying Kaddish. Should I just continue? Sure, I say less to enable myself to say regular tachlin. What if I could finish the regular tachlin if I skip the additions in the middle added for Monday and Thursday? Well, that should be, you're skipping 90%. I'm not sure what the question precisely means. B, Asher Valetzian. I'm usually up to the end of Asher when the Tzibur is saying Kedusha. Should I answer and go back to where I am up to answer and continue with the Tzibur and finish what I skipped later? They're all good questions. I must tell you, my Rebbe, Rabbi Shechter Shlita, he can't keep up with the Tzibur for Tachlin. He told me he divides the Tachlin into three. The long Tachlin, say on Monday and Thursday, is divided into three. And part one and part two both end with the words, Kikael Melech Chan V'Racham Ata. You look in your city, you'll see. So Rabbi Shechter told me he does only one third before he goes Tachton to fall on his Vayom B'David. One third each time, because they're saying so much faster than he is. The questioner over here is not that slow. I think that based on what he's saying, if he does it one half, take the midpoint and do the half on Mondays, and the second half, which I guess Rabbi Shechter is part two and three, on Thursdays. That's what I think you should do to follow Morena Rav Shechter Shlita in that type of a situation. Kane Rili. Let's go on. Asher Volatia. Yes, you must take Kedusha with the Tzibur, and you have no alternative. You should continue with them until what's called the end of Kedusha the Sidra, the three bolded parts now in the Article Siddurim, which Baruch Hashem, since Article came out, is now nearly universally accepted. The Chazan should stop there and say it out loud. When I was growing up with the Tikkun Meir Siddur, it was all one big paragraph, and almost nobody except for the yeshivas did it that way. So Article, once again, has made a big impress in a positive sense on Klal Yisrael. So that's what I think you should do. So yes, it's good. You answer, and you will go back only after they finish the Kedusha de Sidra. Let's go on to question number 9. What is halacha if someone comes late to Slichas? You still have to say Ashrei in the introductory psukim, or should he just join the Tzibur in progress? A. In my opinion, let's take one at a time. He should join the Tzibur in progress. It's true that Ashrei and the psukim are important, but more important is to say slichas with the Tzibur, in particular the Yud Gimel Midas, which can only be said with Tzibur. B. If someone can't keep up with the Tzibur, it's in the middle of a slicha, and the Tzibur is up to Yud Gimel Midas, what should he do? Answer with them and then continue with them, or go back to the slicha he is up to? So that's a serious question. I grew up this way. I could never keep up with the slichas and the shtibul I davened in. So you had to figure what to do. So I would start ahead of them and try to finish, get to the first Yud Gimel Midas together with them. Now every one of the slichas, you say a slicha, you say Yud Gimel Midas, then there are psukim, falat salach nikid varecha. If you know in advance but you can't keep up with them if you say everything. I'd recommend that after you finish your Gilavitos, you don't say those extra psukim. Skip the Slach to give Varecha and all the psukim before and after it, and start the next Slicha, the next Piyut, we call it. In this way, you have a significant head start on the Tzibur, should be able to finish the steps from Piyut. Then once again, you say the Kel Malach Yoshev, and if you can't keep up with them on that, get a head start. And then you say you give them Vidas. And once again, Chol Korecha, then you right away jump to the next tier, because you won't be able to keep up with them otherwise. That's how I grew up as a youngster. I couldn't say as fast as the Tibur. I think it's the best way to handle the situation. Number 10. Seems very popular these days to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. It's also very expensive. Delays Kvura and limits when families can live in Chutzlars from visiting the Kever. What factor should be considered when making this decision? This is a personal decision which every individual has to make for himself or herself. No one can make it for them. Now, there are different considerations. Number one, if there happens to be a family plot in America, there's a certain amount to what we call kever avos. Number two, we have to consider the other side as well. You never know what the future is in Golos. You never know. You don't know what the future of Klal Yisrael will be in the Golos. We never know. And we also never know what the status of the Kvarim will be. If you look in Europe, where Ashkenazi Jews were for a millennium, you see the many parts of the world are Judenrein. There are no Jews living there. And many cemeteries have been defiled and disgraced over the years. All this points to Eretz Yisrael, because that's going to be forever, Mitzvah Hashem, both for the Chaim and for the Mason. And, you know, there's also a certain Ma'ala, I think Mara said, to being buried in Eretz Yisrael. Chifat Maso Amo. Of course, it costs money. Of course, it costs money. It seems to me that a person who is interested in being buried in Eretz Yisrael should buy the kever in his or her lifetime. It's not right to put this expense on Yorshim. We're going to have to worry about it at the last minute when the person dies without any kever whatsoever. It's just not fair. Not fair. It could cause financial pressure. It can cause technical pressure if they buy a cemetery plot at the last minute. The person should buy it in his lifetime, whether he wants to buy it in America or in Eretz Yisrael. Should buy it. Some say, based on the pasuk, "Vishnas Tayovol Hazos Teshuvu Ishalach Uzaso." Person turns 50. That's when he should be worried about these things. He should hopefully live another 70 years, as may have yesterday. But no one lives forever. The person is 50, it's advisable, should buy a kever, whether it be in Chutzlart or whether it be in Eretz Yisrael. If in Eretz Yisrael, if there's a possibility of what we call kever avos over there, to be buried there one's parents, that's good. If there's a couple, they should be next to his parents or her parents, or if it's possible, both parents. I must tell you, the prices of Quran have gone up, both in America and in Eretz Yisrael, somewhat dramatically over the last decades. So it's not so simple, but the person should make the decision by himself, should not be left for grieving and sometimes shocked children, especially if the patir is sudden. If the person is sick, also, the person is sick, and the doctors don't give him too much of a chance, well, that's certainly better then than afterwards. But, you know, it's so hard to start thinking about that at that late stage in life. It's better to be thought about earlier. Roas Anola. Question number 11. Regarding Tchum Shabbos, what is the practical application of the halacha for the person's kelim follow the Tchum of the owner? If my neighbor goes upstate for Shabbos, am I allowed to use his scooters if the kinyan was not made before Shabbos, assuming he is generally not makbid for no wish of Geneva, etc.? B. How does it apply to a family where the father goes away for Shabbos? Can the wife, the children, use his kelim? C. What else do I need to know about this halacha? D. if there is an Eruv in the city where the Kli is the, quote, Mokom Shvisa, only the house or the entire area enclosed by the city Eruv? It's a very, very complicated question. The place to find this is in the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Shin Tzadi Zion. Shin Tzadi Zion, this halacha, is discussed, and too difficult to go into every prat, every detail of the shayla, a number of the general guidelines. And Shin Tzadi Zion, Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Shulchan Aruch tells us that just as a person can't go more than a pi'ama from where he is, so too his utensils cannot be moved out of the 2,000 amas of his radius. That's what it says. More than that, for example, there is Reuven and Shimon are together in the town, and Reuven made an Erev Tchumen to go to the west, additional 2,000 amas. Shimon shouldn't move this Kli, even Psia Achas, even one step where Reuven can't go. Because Reuven made an Erev to the west, he can go 4,000 amas west, not even one step east. So therefore, that same, by the same token, Shimon, who has the Kli, can't transport it, even one amma to the east. So there are serious potential problems in such circumstances. Of course, the question is over here, what does the status have in the case of a scooter? I would say that it should not be moved. Can it be moved a little bit? Let's just read the whole question. How does it apply to a family where the father goes away for Shabbos because the wife and the children use his kelim? Well, you have to know, Makom Shvisa. Here's a difficult situation. When it comes to a wife and kids, Shulchan Aruch seems to be strict when it says in the Siv Dalet, Hamosa Behemta Livno, Hareku Ragli Ha'av, it doesn't depend upon the child, it depends upon the father who owns it, the Mishnah Brura, and Siv Katan, Yud Harbe Cholkam on the Machava. They say no, if you give it to him, typically, it would work. Even if you give it to him on Shabbos, and certainly in this case before Shabbos, he's giving him the items. So it's very possible that leniency would apply in this case as well. The father went away, clearly wants his kids to use it. Is it considered to be giving over? It's hard to know. Giving over does not require a transfer of ownership. So it's explicitly in this very simon, for example, Sifrit Aleph, Hashoel el kli mechaveru, he borrowed the kli, so the fellow gave it to him. You don't have to transfer it to him. He gave it to him. So the question is this giving to somebody? When the father goes on a trip, all of his kalim to his wife and kids. I think it's room to be lenient and say that it's not considered a problem. I think that's the custom. The Minhag Yisrael is that way. Is that way? Therefore, there's no problem of an Erev. The entire area is enclosed by the Erev, so then the wife and the kids can carry it, no problem, anywhere in the city within the Erev. In the first case, it's not the wife and kids, it's the neighbor, where it's difficult to say that he gave it over to the neighbor. He didn't do that. He left it there. He may not mind if they come into his yard and use it, but he didn't give it to them. As we said before, it's a serious problem. The question is, how serious? Is it so serious you can't even go one amma, as the Shulchan Aruch says in Siv Gimel? Or perhaps the case over here, can't go one amma, can't even one psia, is only if the 2,000 ammas stop right there. So until now, it was in his range, now you're taking it out of his range. As opposed to a case that was always out of his range, then perhaps the entire house or the entire city is considered to be permissible to move it on Shabbos. Question 12. What is the proper way to wash when doing Haftarah on Shabbos? Should a woman not do it on Shabbos? Does it make a difference if they have several children already? We never postpone a tefillah. Almost never. Of course it has to be done on Shabbos. Doesn't matter, children or no children. How do you do it on Shabbos? Okay, so you can either use cold water when you wash, or if you have some water in an urn, you can mix it with some other water in a proper fashion, which means you would put the water into a klisheni, and then it's too hot, you mix in some cold water, and that's lukewarm water, and that's the way it should be washed. We should never postpone it. 13. Can a chamishi be an aid at a wedding? I.e., chassans, fathers, mothers, husbands, daughters, husbands. Woo. Clearly, by strict halacha, there's absolutely no problem. There is a minhag that we don't use krovim of any sort for aid kiddushin. Aid kiddushin is the most serious part of the wedding. We try, if we know how they're related, not to do, not to use it. Any other aidus, ksuba, yichud, tznoim, which are not so critical, I would say there's certainly room in this extreme case to be lenient. Thank you very much.
Rebbe, we thank you very much, and Bezrat Hashem, we hope to be able to call on Rebbe in the near future. Thank you.
Amen. Bye-bye.